In a galaxy far, far away, there has been an awakening in the Force. A new entity rising out of the shadows to be our only hope, and the Star Wars Destiny website that I have been looking for. Top Deck TCG. This place is the bright center of the universe for all your gaming needs. Top Deck TCG has everything that is Star Wars Destiny. Use the promo code REBEL when checking out to receive 10% off your entire order. Now, that's a deal even the Hutts can get behind.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
This is Reflex from the Hyperloops, your 2018 North American champion, and you are listening to iRebel, a Star Wars Destiny podcast.
Forgery of Imperial documents. Possession of stolen property, aggravated assault.
State your name for the record.
Jyn Erso. We have a mission for you.
I want to help.
Good.
The world is coming undone. Imperial flags reign across the galaxy.
I fear nothing. All is as the Force wills it.
Every day they grow stronger. There isn't much time. I rebel.
Welcome everyone to I Rebel. I am Jedi Geek Girl, and joining me as always is my wonderful co-host, Sarah.
Hello.
Hi Sarah, how are you doing today?
I'm really good today. How are you, Jedi Geek Girl?
I am doing really well. It is nice being over that polar vortex because, man oh man, was it cold over here.
Yeah, and we didn't actually get any snow. Well, we got like the smallest amount of snow sort of in the southeast, so like London area. The rest of the country had quite a lot, but we had absolutely none, so I feel a bit left out.
Yeah, just be thankful that you didn't have that because that was quite an experience. I kind of hibernated. I'm a bit of a coward, but all these things that you see online about what was going on was absolutely crazy. It was definitely a once, two, or twice, maybe thrice a lifetime experience, that's for sure.
Yeah, I saw quite a few bits online about doors being frozen or ice coming inside. It looked insane.
As much as we can continue talking about polar vortex, we are not alone. We have a very wonderful guest who I am really looking forward to talking to because we've been trying to have him on for quite some time. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to introduce our guest for this episode, the man FFG calls Adam, but we call him Reflex, the 2018 North American champion, Andrew Cox.
Wow, what an introduction. Thank you. That's great. All you guys talking about all this ice and snow up in the north, and it got down into the 40s here. That was my polar vortex experience. It wasn't too bad.
You know, I would absolutely kill for that because we had that yesterday, and it felt like, I'm not even kidding. When you have sub-below zero weather, that is absolutely horrible. You will kill for 30s and 40s. Like yesterday, I swore I could have gone out in like shorts and short sleeves, and I would have been so happy because it's just a shift. So I would have taken that in a heartbeat. That's for sure.
I can't even comprehend what that's like. Yeah, we had to turn the heater on. It was a rough couple days. It was tough down here. We're back into the 80s though now, so everything's back to normal.
Hey Rebels, Bobby Sapphire here. This show is made possible through the generous donations of everyone who's a patron of iRebel. It is the pledges of those patrons and you, the listening audience, that makes iRebel work. If you'd like to find out more information about the rewards you can get, as well as how you can play a part in iRebel, please check out patreon.com/iRebelDestiny for more information. I myself am a proud patron of iRebel, and I'm happy to share my love of iRebel with you by telling you all about their Patreon page. So check it out, and if you like what you see, become a rebel by becoming a patron of iRebel. Back to you, Sarah and Jedi Geek Girl.
Kicking this episode off like we usually like to do here, let's begin by asking you how your guys' weeks was in Star Wars, starting with, I guess, Reflex.
So Star Wars related, I most have been prepping for my Imperial Assault Regional, which happened yesterday. So I did a little research. I haven't put a lot of time into that game. I think the last game I played was at Worlds in May. So I've had a lot of catching up to do. So I've just been prepping for that. And then I went to the regional yesterday, was able to get a top four. So I was pretty happy about that. That's pretty much it. Nothing else too crazy in Star Wars world right now.
How about you, sir?
Quiet one for me, really. It's just been avoided any talk about episode 9, which is buzzing a bit at the moment. I'm not sure if it's spoilers or just rumours, but I've tried to just stay clear. So it's been pretty quiet for me in terms of Star Wars.
I have to kind of echo that about episode 9. I don't know what it is, but it seems like this past week or two, I really started getting excited for episode 9. I know that Celebration is right around the corner and a trailer will be coming then. So while I am looking forward to episode 9, my week has basically been reading. I know that since the last time I talked, I read another 2 or 3 books. And now I'm on the first book of the Han Solo trilogy. So I am plowing through my books because I know that there is a lot of books coming for Star Wars this year. And I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I absolutely love it. It's like going to be the best Star Wars year since the Disney buyout, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm one who tries to avoid spoilers as much as possible. So I've been kind of staying away from episode 9 talk. The book's interesting. It's definitely something that I have no experience in. I might have to talk to you some days about where to get started there.
Oh, I have so many recommendations.
Yeah, she's really helped me get started. So yeah, to speak to her.
Yeah, definitely. I'm an audiobook fan, so I don't have a ton of time to listen anymore, but I still like to get some time in.
I know that Sarah has mentioned this previously, but do you find playing the game creates more interest in the expanded canon itself, or is it more of your fandom getting more and more curious outside of Star Wars Destiny?
The game has absolutely expanded my interest in the Star Wars universe in general. I really didn't have much exposure outside of the movies and then maybe some video games as I was younger growing up. And then once I started playing X-Wing and Destiny, I really was curious about some of these characters and different things that were popping up in the games. Actually, the reason I watched Clone Wars and the Rebels in the first place was because of the games and wanting to be more familiar with the characters.
That absolutely makes me so happy. I am so glad to see people expand out of the films and the TV shows into the books and the comics and the video games, because this is a large universe. Like, there's so much that you can read. But I don't want to get too sidetracked because we have a long episode in front of us. I would like to move on to how was your week in Star Wars Destiny, starting with Reflex.
This last week was pretty quiet for me. Obviously, the week prior, I was full into regional prep mode, which you can read more about the article I wrote on the Hyperloops, and then playing in the regional in Miami. This last week, I've definitely been helping some teammates do some prep. I played my top 8 match in the Artificery League cut and just helping a couple friends prep for their regionals. So haven't done too much playing outside of that league match, but still staying a little interested in how the results are coming across the game.
I was at London Regionals yesterday. I took Han Kira. I decided to switch it up, play something different, go back to what I was on at the very start of when the set hit. It was a really good day, actually. We were thinking maybe people wouldn't turn up because of the cold weather, but it was fine. The event was actually won by a very young man called Lewis. I think he's probably the youngest ever winner of a regional, as far as I know anyway. He won with Vader Greedo. And yeah, it was a great event.
We were talking before we started recording, sir, about your round one opponent. Would you like to give that opponent a shout out?
Yeah, so he's actually the Lewis's dad. So sort of shout out to both of them. Thanks for the game. It was a close one and well done for Lewis's win.
Absolutely. That is wonderful to hear when you see such a young player do so well. I know that we have a couple younger players in our area. And of course, there's Isaac over on the East Coast area. So I think he's on the East Coast. I'm not sure where he lives. I think maybe he lives in Indiana. Do you know Reflex?
I don't know exactly. I know he was at the New York regional yesterday and made the top cut there. So I would assume somewhere on the East Coast. I've actually never met him.
I met him. He's the one that is most famous for his Lego deck box. I don't know if he uses it anymore, but that is his claim to fame. My week for Star Wars Destiny has been a little bit relaxed. Obviously, I have been busy working on the podcast, getting it out, working on the regionals results. But what I have been doing this week is thinking about a deck for a upcoming new player tournament, or not really tournament, but free play event, where we want to build a deck that is friendly to newer players. And I was trying to decide, like, what do I want to play? Do I want to play Pole 1 again? I'm like, yeah, but it's not about winning. It's not about who has the best record. So I decided that I am going to build a deck around one of my favorite characters, and that is Aphra. But not the Aphra deck that we all know and love. It will actually be Elite Aphra, Vader 1, 1 die. I think that is very thematic, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to try to cram as many promos as I can into it. It's going to be so bad. but so thematic. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Is this something that you're going to lend to new players to play with, or are you yourself going to play with it?
We are going to play with other players, like in a tournament type structure, but there's nothing on the line. Like, everybody gets the same thing for entering, so.
So it's something to like introduce new players to it, and you're going to all sort of have quite sort of janky decks, so they're not going to get completely smashed.
Exactly. And it's going to be a lot of fun too, because I don't get to play quote unquote jank decks a lot. So it's going to be really interesting, because I am trying to think, how am I going to make Vader 1 one die work?
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. Usually during my downtime and off seasons, because I don't get to play non-competitive decks very often either, I try to take the promos that I haven't gotten to play with yet and try to make decks out of them. So I have all my random awakening spot glosses that I haven't played with yet that are on the list now for the next few weeks.
Before I wrap up this segment and move into your interview, I would like to propose the question, if you are attending this event, what deck would you guys play?
Oh man, that's a tough one. I don't know how to turn my brain off and not make a hyper-competitive deck.
What about like a thematic ping?
I think I might try to do some kind of like Han Chewie deck. Doesn't the new version of Han Chewie work now?
Yes, you could run Solidarity, or you could run Han 2 with Chewie.
Yeah, something like that seems like it'd be a lot of fun.
How about you, Sarah?
I'd probably try and make original Luke work from Awakening, because I didn't get into the game until late Spirit Rebellion. So I've got him, but I haven't really played with him. So I'd probably try and put something together with him. I think his draw ability is really good, but I've never played with him. So I would love to just put something together and give him a go.
Those sound like great ideas. I know that having jank events are great to have, because it's nice to relax and turn off your competitive brain. But moving into our interview proper, how and when did you become familiar with Star Wars?
So I don't really have one specific memory. I kind of grew up in the prequel era, so I have fond memories of that, you know, video games, all the thing, you know, toys surrounding that era. I definitely enjoyed the prequels. I'm not a prequel hater. So it's kind of just something that was on the periphery. Like, Star Wars was never a huge thing in my life until recently. It was just something I enjoyed. I definitely watched all the movies and, you know, had a bunch of different other things. But really getting into these FFG games is what really made me dive more and deeper into the universe itself. So it's been a pretty cool experience.
So how did you get into Star Wars Destiny? What made you pick it up?
So I was first played X-Wing. I had a regular board game group where I had a few friends down in South Florida that a couple of them had picked up X-Wing and were just kind of playing some games on the side. So I went over to their house one, played one game, then instantly went home and spent like $200, $300 on ships and buying everything. I was hooked. It was amazing. So I definitely got into X-Wing first. And then just as playing that, became more familiar with FFG games. So as Destiny came out, a couple of the X-Wing guys picked up starters. We were lucky enough that we got enough. We didn't get too badly impacted by the shortage. So I picked up a couple starters just as kind of like, oh, this will be a fun side game to play in between X-Wing games or during downtime at a tournament. And then again, I played one or two games, fell in love with it, and was instantly hooked, bought like six boxes of Awakenings, and the rest is history.
That sounds very familiar to my story, really. Just got completely hooked and just kept buying way too much product. But yeah, it's just quite addictive.
Yeah, I originally bought it as just like this nice little side game that I could play every once in a while. And we all see where that turned out. I think it's pretty much taken over as my primary game. Although I go fairly back and forth between X-Wing and Destiny.
That isn't the only game that you play, because last year, didn't you win a third Star Wars game regionals event?
I did. Last year was a very good season for me. I won regionals in X-Wing, Destiny, and Imperial Assault. That's the third game. I actually just had the Imperial Assault regional yesterday, where I wasn't able to go back-to-back, but I did top four, so I was pretty happy with that.
Aren't you, like, the only person to do that, I believe, at least in the United States?
I'm not aware of anyone else that has regional titles in three games. I tweeted FFG to see if they had heard of anybody, and they were not very helpful, so... Yeah, I'm the only person I'm aware of that has done that. I'm pretty proud of it, and especially in one season and in Florida that has a really flourishing scene for all three games. We had pretty good size regionals for all three games. So I'm pretty proud of that, yeah.
I would like to wrap up this introductory segment with a question that I really enjoy asking, and that is, can you please share with us something about yourself that is unique outside of Star Wars and Star Wars Destiny that perhaps the community does not know?
Sure. So I'm a pretty competitive person and have been my whole life. I started in traditional sports. I played baseball growing up. But then in college, I went to some untraditional sports. So I played paintball and ultimate frisbee for my college. Actually started the paintball team, and I continued playing those outside of college until some injuries and age slowed me down. So that's kind of one of the reasons I picked up these competitive tabletop games, is I've just been used to playing sports and things my whole life. So it's kind of filled that itch that I had from sports.
We have so much that we can dive into. There was a lot of news this week that came out of FSG, as well as spoilers that we can talk about. I want to talk about one specifically, and that will be about the new structure for organized play coming in for Star Wars Destiny, the 2019-2020 season. Have you guys had a chance to look at this article, and what are your first impressions of the new structure, starting with Reflect?
Yeah, so I definitely dove in and read over the article. There's been a good amount of comments and discussion throughout the community. My overall thoughts, and this pretty much goes for everything since the OP staffing has changed, is just positive. I don't necessarily agree 100% with everything that they're doing, but I think there's still room for them to finalize details and come out and listen to feedback. But just the communication level, specifically Alex Watkins, I know is one of the heads of OP that's come over. I believe he was in Europe, and I've heard nothing but positive things from the European community about him, and everything I've seen him do so far has been great. As soon as that article was posted, he was in the comments of the Facebook thread, discussing with people, answering people's questions. And that's something we've literally never had at FFG. So just the communication level, and it seems like they're being more open. It's really refreshing. And so I'm very, very hopeful for organized play going into 2019 and 2020. And I hope these new people in charge are able to have their vision come true and see where it can take us.
Yeah, I can back that up, actually. Because there's a couple of guys that have moved over from Europe, especially from the UK, being from the UK office, and they have always been quite helpful in the UK Facebook group with any questions where maybe an event wasn't clarified very well and people have to ask questions, and they've always been very responsive. So the fact these guys are now like looking after OP on a global level, I think is a great thing. And as Respec said, they were very responsive with people's questions after this article came out. So overall, I have a very positive feeling. I think OP is going in a great direction. For me, I'm probably most excited about a bit more emphasis on the casual side of things. So they're going to sort of stop the quarterly kits from being just completely about doing the tournaments and maybe give them out for more sort of casual events, reward people for turning up to their locals. I think that's a great thing to do, and not just kind of thinking about things on a tournament level, really trying to get new players into the game and keep people turning up when we have those dry spells. So ultimately, I think things are really positive and it's a really good sign going forward.
I would have to agree with that. I am very positive about this article, but what I am most positive about is the communication, not only from organized play, but FFG in general. This week, a streaming schedule was announced, which we would assume will feature spoilers, but that is something that we haven't seen from FFG across the board. It seems like they're more communicative. It's nice to have that because we didn't have that last year. And I am a little bit mixed about the details in the article, but I'm glad to see that we are seeing that FFG is improving themselves. And I don't want to say take the game seriously, but take the game more seriously than they have in the past.
I don't know if I would necessarily say taking the game seriously, but it seems like they're taking the community more seriously. And I think that's a huge positive step in the right direction. And hopefully that'll lead to better changes. Like you said, I think the casual changes are really good. I think we struggled with the quarterly kits. You know, it's the same thing. By the end of the time, everyone has all those prizes. You know, if you win them a second time, they get passed down. There wasn't a lot for us to come out and fight for. So I think they're going more card-based and more of them so that, you know, there's reasons to come out again and again to these casual local nights. So I think from a casual to a competitive level, I think, yeah, it's just positive all around.
Yeah, I also quite like how they've got sort of icons now as they go down towards the levels. So there's not going to be that confusion about, so is the store championship as good as a regionals, etc. They've got more sort of set names. And then there's this little graphic that has a little bit more detail to it as the level of the tournament gets sort of more high class, which I think is really positive as well, just to have that graphical representation. So you know what level you're at. If you're a new player, you know what best is to come in at. And if you're a really competitive player, what the top events are. I think they've done a good job with that.
I want to talk about one thing in this article, because there is a lot of things in the article that I really do agree with, and I think it's a good step forward. But I think we do need to talk about the change to worlds in 2020. I know that that is over a year away, but with it changing to it being invite only, that is a new change, not only for Star Wars Destiny, but for FFG in general. Granted, there are some games that are using that this year, but for Star Wars Destiny, this is a whole new world. What do you think of these changes, and overall, do you think it is good, or do you think it still needs a little bit more tweaking?
I think there's positive and negative. So as a purely competitive player, which I absolutely am, I love the idea of an invite-only worlds. I think just having a smaller, more concentrated pool of players that are all elite players and have earned the right to be there could lead to some really interesting... I think it'll let the meta develop more interestingly, and I think it'll be better for just the tournament aspect. However, there's some drawbacks. And I think as just a community figure and someone who likes to go to Worlds, to see all these people that I see once or twice a year, hang out, have a good time, I think it's a negative. I think there's some things that they can do to kind of bridge the gap between those two things and have an invite-only Worlds that promotes the competitive side of the game while not completely excluding the rest of the community. X-Wing is going invite Worlds this year, so we're kind of already there in one of the communities I'm a part of. So people have had some really good ideas of doing something like a last chance qualifier at Worlds. So if you're not able to make it, you know, you come in on a Thursday or Friday, you can play in a qualifying tournament and still possibly make the invite-only tournament. And if you don't, you're already there, people are already hanging out, and there's side events that you can participate in. I think that's a really good way to still promote the competitive side while still being able to bring the community together and give people a reason to come out if they weren't able to qualify during the season. But yeah, I think my major concern is just I don't want the community to be closed off, because Worlds really is a great time for everyone to come together. And if you force people out into different events, something like Gen Con or something, that's way more expensive and way harder for people to get to. So I'd really be scared to lose the community aspect.
My opinion's mostly the same, actually. In some aspects, it's quite good that Worlds will be the prime event for competitive play. They've opened it up so top four players of a grand championship will get their seat. And then for the continental, you get top eight. So that's a lot better than it is right now for getting an invite. But yeah, I have the same concerns that maybe it might shrink the community a little bit, make it a little bit less fun for those who can't get that invite, who keep trying. Maybe it might filter down and make regionals a little bit more competitive, which, you know, depending on your stance on that, is possibly good, possibly bad. So I've got mixed feelings about it too. I know people who play Imperial Assault, I saw some chatter on Twitter, weren't too happy with the changes because they were worried their community is so small already. They were just concerned it was just going to annihilate too many people. So it will be interesting to see what happens with X-Wing this year. Yeah, I just hope it just doesn't annihilate too many people.
I agree with what both of you are saying. I look at it as a casually competitive person. Obviously, I am competitive, but I'm not top tier. I don't have the time to devote to a game, to play test, to play all these different decks and grind my way to an invite. I am not that type of player, nor will I ever be. But I can try to do the best I can to try to make it. I look at it from a player that goes to these events for the community. And what I look forward to most at Worlds is the community. So when I first saw this announcement, part of me was a little bit down because I'm like, invite only, that will mean I will never be able to attend as a player. But I am okay with that because I realized that having a world championship that is invite only is a lot better for the game. And having an event that is more prestigious to the competitive player is something that we want. So I agree with that wholeheartedly. But I also look at it like this is an event. If you've been to Worlds the last couple of years, you have seen Worlds become this major, no, not only this last 2 years, but these last 3 years, because I've been going to Worlds for the last three World Championships, and it is a community-based event. It keeps growing from year to year and year. And last year, it was so much fun, and it was such an experience that is something that keeps me going to Worlds, because there is nothing like it outside of like a major convention. However, I look at it as a way of including people who aren't the most competitive. And on that retrospect, I agree 100%. A last chance qualifier would be the perfect middle ground. Because I also look at it like this. Last year, FFG ran side events for Star Wars Destiny. And anybody who was at Worlds will know that they kept firing. And not only did they keep firing, they were backed up. You had to wait like maybe 2 or 4 hours in order to play. So I look at that and I'm like, that is money on the table for FFG. So they could go one or two ways. Either they could expand or they could contract. And I think they chose to contract instead of expand. And part of me is like, I don't know why they wouldn't expand, because I don't know about you, but I would drop a couple $100 very easily on side events.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is they've shrunk the amount of games at each gathering now. So Destiny and X-Wing, which are, I think, are their two biggest games, are going to be alone in their own worlds as it is now. I think it's too early to make a call on anything. I think they've kind of put out some base information, and I think it's up to the community to share this feedback. You know, if you want a last chance qualifier, if you want the invite-only worlds, if you're concerned about being able to go and play inside events, I think we need to give them a second chance. FFG kind of got this reputation as not listening. OP wasn't very responsive. They didn't communicate anything. There's new leadership there, and they've already shown that they want to change. So let's give them the chance to. I think now is a really good time, based off of this article, to share your feedback and share what you're looking for and what you want. And let's give them the chance to respond to that. I think they've left a lot of details out purposely, and probably because they just don't know yet. So I think there's still a lot of room for events to change and to grow and to, you know, evolve into what the community wants.
Exactly. This structure isn't even set in stone yet, at least for not for Star Wars Destiny, because we still have another almost 2 years before these effects take effect for the World Championship. And right now, they said in the article or on a post that they want your feedback. And that's why I want to talk about this on the podcast, because I'm sure somebody, I don't know who, listens to this podcast. And yes, a last chance qualifier is perfect. Outside of that, I have no other issue with the new structure. And yeah, if you agree with us or you have different opinions, please send FFG Organized Play an email. Or if you're locally, talk to them, because they said that they are open for feedback. So let's give it to them, positive and negative.
Yeah, I mean, something like a last minute qualifier wouldn't really appeal to anyone outside the States, because obviously we have to plan flights, hotels, and it's a little bit more of an issue getting over there to do something quite last minute. So I think that wouldn't be great for anyone sort of this side in Europe. But yeah, I mean, if we could open it up to maybe some more casual side things that are open, if you don't get into the main tournament, then that's and still have that community feel, that'd be brilliant.
I do know that if FSG doesn't do anything to include players who did not get an invite, I am pretty confident that the Star Wars Destiny community will step up and fill that void. I realize that it would not be the same thing. It would be quite far from the same thing. And it would not attract a lot of players to come out who don't have an invite. But maybe it could still be something that you will see going. Because if there's one thing about Star Wars Destiny, it is that we are quite self-sufficient. Maybe not as self-sufficient as we would like to be. But you have a lot of creative members in the community locally who would do that. And I would definitely see that happening. I know I don't see Knights of Ren stopping their evening get-together. I'm sure the Hyperloops will have some sort of thing. I realize that that might constrict it locally. But I do realize that I am sure that the community will fill that void if FFG doesn't, because we are a community. No, we are a family. And I am optimistic. Moving on to our main segment, I want to talk about something that I am not familiar with. I am not a mill player, but coming off US regional win with Yoda, Cassian, Anakin, I want to talk about this deck because while I am familiar with it and you've had success with it more than once, I want to get into the nitty-gritty of it because I think it is a good conversation. Reflex, can you give us a brief overview of how the deck works?
So this is the Millpocalypse, the deck that I took to Gen Con, won there, and then I took down the Miami Regional 2 weekends ago with it. Biggest strength, I think, is its health pool. It was originally developed in an aggressive meta that had a lot of two-wide aggro decks, where traditional two-wide mill decks couldn't survive because if you lost a character too early, your one single character just couldn't do enough to grind out and finish games. So this three-wide deck was built so that if a character goes down early, you still have enough value left to be able to finish games. So its biggest strength is its health pool. The entire deck isn't centered around one person. All three characters bring something valuable to the deck. So losing any one of them doesn't really slow you down a ton. So that's its biggest strength, I think. It's just there's probably, you know, a good target, but there's not necessarily one right target for every game. And we're able to adapt and adjust based on the game plan and the matchup that we're playing against.
Yeah, so this was actually in top 8 in a regional I was at yesterday, and I was watching it. It seemed to me that it was hard to know who to go for, actually, because it was like Anakin's Podracer comes out and it's really aggressively milling you if you don't get rid of Anakin. But then Yoda's there being really annoying with his shields and his resource generation. So it doesn't seem like there's a really clear target and you can switch your tactic quite easily. And it's not a major deal if you lose one of those three characters too early.
Yeah, absolutely. The deck is built to be adaptable. I think just on a general basis, Yoda probably provides the most value. But obviously, once the Podracer comes down, Anakin's value in the deck skyrockets. Being able to take two cards from hand instead of just one and one from deck is invaluable. I mean, Cassian is also just there getting, you know, generally a resource and a card or two cards, providing tremendous value. And that's generally where the upgrades go as well. So yeah, it is really tough. I think Yoda's probably, you know, generally the right choice, but it could change depending on the matchup, like I said. So the deck is built to be adaptable and it's just there to extract maximum value from all of the dice. So every single one of our dice, every single one of our characters does so much for us that it's there to just survive, adapt, and then get value.
This deck has already been previously established and a lot of people know how to play against it. They have experienced it. They've heard about it. But would you say that with the meta changing that Anakin is still like the preferred target, or do you think that the target has shifted with the new meta?
I think a lot of it depends on how round one goes and what deck you're playing against. I think Anakin was a pretty good target early on back in the Gen Con meta. However, I think Yoda probably is the better target now, just because of how valuable force jumps are in the meta. We only ran one at Gen Con just because we were scared of Yoda being the target and having too much blue only. But now we're up to two, obviously, because it's just such a blowout in the Vader matchups and a lot of other matchups it's really good in. So I think the general target is probably Yoda, but especially if the Podracer comes down round one, there's absolutely an argument to be made for Anakin.
So I've heard it's probably weakest matchup is against the two wide mill, just because it can mill you so much quicker. Is there any other sort of matchups that you would be a bit wary of?
Not really. The only negative matchup I really think it has is two wide mill. Like you said, they're just able to get to your hand faster and claim to get extra value out of the deck. And then so our slowness, we're not able to extract as much value because we lose our cards. So we're not able to use our cards to extract the value to make it up. So I think two wide mill absolutely is its worst matchup. After that, any kind of Snoke deck is always tough. You know, the old Snoke Aphra Battle Droid was one of our worst matchups in the pre Across the Galaxy meta. So anything that can just get extra value that it's hard for us to stop is tough to deal with. I still think the Snoke Aphra Battle Droid is probably about a 50-50 matchup, but that's really the basis of the deck. There's not a lot of matchups that are trying to do damage to us that have better than a 50-50.
So one of the matches I was watching yesterday, the Millionaires deck was up against Sienna and Beckett, and it lost 2-1 in the end. First round, it vandalized the fire spray, and that was pretty much game over. But the next two rounds, it just kind of lost to the constant reset of the fire spray, and it didn't seem to be able to control the money that well to stop Sienna doing her power action.
I haven't personally had problems in that matchup. I think you have to lean a lot on EMP grenades is obviously big. I'm running two in my deck because of decks like that. Even if you're not necessarily using the special, the disrupt is very, very valuable in the meta right now. I think people are expecting to have a lot of money and run decks with a lot of money. It can definitely be tough if they're able to get that fire spray loaded up, especially with a TLT early in the game. But force jumps are really good there. EMP grenades are really good there. So I think it's just a matter of making sure you're mulliganing and valuing the right cards correctly in the matchup. But I personally haven't had a problem in that matchup.
Would you say that that is the only change that you made to the deck with this new format? Or are there other changes you made to the deck for the new format?
So I made some changes from Gen Con into Nationals last year because I ran the deck at Nationals as well. I actually had put one EMP grenade back then before it was really, really popular. And that was really good for me at Nationals. The most recent version I ran at Miami was very, very different. And that was mostly due to two wide becoming so popular in the meta and it really having a breakout performance the week prior. I expected to have a lot and there was a lot. I played it 5 out of my 10 games at the regional were against two wide mill. So we made up a lot of adjustments and tech choices specifically to deal with that matchup. while trying not to weaken ourselves too much to the field.
So do you think it's a deck that will survive into the next meta? Especially once rotation sort of takes out those survival cards like Second Chance, Force Illusions.
Yeah, so that's going to be really interesting. The deck loses a ton. So Second Chance and Force Illusion are absolutely massive. But there's a lot of other decks that are also losing that survivability. I think the biggest thing it's losing is just all of its upgrades. The only thing we really get to keep is Anakin's Podracer and Force Jump. So just finding value mill dice in the new rotation setting is going to be tough. It'll be interesting to see where it goes. I mean, the character pairing is still very strong and the characters themselves. We still have Anakin's Podracer, which is probably the best card in the deck altogether. So it'll be interesting to see what comes in to replace that. I know in Trilogy, I played Leia Lando Mill. Using Stealthy, obviously, in that deck is massive. So I think that's probably the forerunner right now as far as the best mill deck in the new format. There's so many cards that are coming out of Convergence. We have to wait to see, you know, once rotation hits, where we can take the deck. But I think it's possible. I think it's taking a huge hit, but we'll just have to wait and see what comes out and if any of the blue-yellow cards are able to take the place of what we have now.
One of my favorite stories with Star Wars Destiny is when you see a deck from previous format resurfaces in a new format. What was it about E, Yoda, Cassian, Anakin that made you want to play it in this new format, considering that it is a new format and things have changed since the last format?
Yeah, so the biggest thing for me were just a lot of the new decks that were coming out in response to Vader. I think both mill decks have a pretty good matchup into Vader, so there wasn't really any decision point there. But the previous couple weeks really saw Tarkin Snoke, which is probably the worst matchup two wide mill has. That just overwhelms with so much indirect damage and you don't have enough health across your characters to deal with it. Not having Second Chance is a huge deal in that matchup. And then just two wide aggro made a huge comeback. So things like Han Yoda did really well. Things like Han Kira did really well. Those are all way tougher matchups for two wide mill to handle, just because, again, if they have one good action cheating rollout and kill a character early, the game's pretty much over. So the meta had started going back to what it looked like at Gen Con, where there was a lot of two wide aggro, and then that big indirect deck, three wide is just able to handle a lot better. So I really think three wide has a better matchup against every deck in the field, except for two wide. So if we're comparing two wide and three wide is just way more consistent and had its plus matchups against the field. So that's why I felt it was the right choice. I actually took both of them to Miami and just kind of made a gut call. I was there. I wanted the consistency and kind of just the safeness of that three wide and the health gives you.
I know that Sarah brought up rotation and what the deck might look like after rotation. I know that I was talking with another Hyperloop member, Bobby Sapphire, and he was thinking that Yoda, Anakin, and Jar Jar, I think it was, could be a fun mill deck next format with the Allies of Necessity plot. What do you think about that? Do you think that Allies of Necessity could change the deck and we might see the deck evolve into a very similar deck or a different deck? Or do you think the deck will be more or less the same or even dead at that point in time?
Yeah, so again, I think the biggest thing for any blue, yellow mill deck is going to be the upgrade package and what they get in the new set. I think if any deck can survive the ally necessity drawbacks, which is you lose your first round resources and a card, I think Yoda and Anakin, especially both of them at Elite, are the deck that can do that. Both of those characters always have really good money sides, and it's pretty easy to generate value out of them in round one. The extra Jar Jar effect seems really good, and having six dice seems absolutely insane. Being able to vandalize a Vader's Fist is massive. So being able to hit both Vader's Fist and Shadowcaster with Vandalize now, I think opens up a lot of avenues. I think it's really interesting. I think it's definitely something that I would explore. But yeah, just having six character dice seems nuts. So I think it could be something, but we really need to see what upgrades we get, because if we don't have any, you know, we're losing all of our value and all of our discard sides. We'll have to see where it goes, or if red-yellow is just a better pairing.
So did you take this to any regionals lately?
Yeah, so being in Florida, we only have one regional, unfortunately. So I took this 2 weeks ago to the Miami regional, which is the one that I was able to win.
How did you do at that regional? Obviously, you won, but like, did you have any tough games or did everything go as you planned it?
It was a tough day. It was definitely a grind. So I had a store championship bye. So I started off 1-0, which was very nice. I think that was the reason I made the cut, was because I had the bye in round one. So I lost my first game against Tarkin Snoke. I just wasn't on my game and totally missed the Tarkin power action, and it won the game for him. My second chance was in the bottom two cards. So that was rough. Going in 0-1, I was 1-1 technically after the bye. I was a little worried about how my strength of schedule would hold up. But after that, I played two Tarkin Snokes back-to-back. I split 1-1 with those. Then I played two Leia Yoda, two Wide Mills back-to-back. I split 1-1 with those. And then thankfully, my last round was against the Vader, which was a matchup I'm super comfortable with. And was able to take it pretty easily. So I finished Swiss at 4-2 and snuck into the cut at 8th place exactly. So it was a little scary, but the bye definitely helped and I was able to get there. Then my top 8 match was against Leia Yoda. So 3 more games against my worst possible matchup. But thankfully, the changes we made to the deck really helped. And the tech cards really did what they were supposed to. I was able to pull it out 2-1 in a very close match that was on stream. Shout out to the Jackalman Games guys, streamed the whole regional. That was the only time I was on stream, was that top 8 match. Then I was able to 2-0 in the top 4 versus Han Kira. Again, that's just a pretty good matchup for me. Really tough. Not a lot they can do. Just too much health for them to get through. And then my buddy and I, who I drove down with in the finals, he conceded to me so I could get the Nationals by. And we will be playing for the trophy at a later date.
So did you have anything particular teched against Leia Yoda?
Yeah, so I actually wrote up an article on the Hyperloops last week, kind of detailing our week of a deck building process and how we got down to this deck. I had kind of decided by Wednesday prior that I wanted to run mill. So we were on two wide mill and we just want to see if we could figure out a way to make the mirror match winnable. But really there was no cards or no play style adjustments we could make to make that match feel anything more than just who drew the cards at the right time. It felt very swingy and not a lot of play. There wasn't a lot of decision making you could do to make give yourself a positive matchup. So the goal was if we could tech out three wide mill to at least be 50-50 versus two wide mill, we would take that and then have really good matchups for the rest of the field. So some of the things we did is we cut the force meditations in favor of strength or weakness, which is a 3-cost card that says mill the top 4 cards of your opponent's deck. And what that did for us is it allowed us to have an action 1 card we could play against Leia that got us enough value. So it did cost 1 more than meditation, but it gets around removal. And something that Leia Yoda is really good at is getting out fast and hitting your hand before you're able to do anything. So having a card we could play action 1 of the new round and be able to get value out of before they hit our hand was really, really valuable. And it absolutely came into play in all of my two wide mill matchups. So that was a big one. We put 2 of those in. And then after we put that in, what we found was that we could get ahead in the matchup. So generally going into the last round, it's always a race of who can get the last cards in your hand and then claim, because that's the tiebreaker if you're both milled out. So we were always able to get ahead and we're usually up anywhere between 3 to 4 cards going into the last round. But we had a really tough time closing before Leia Yoda was able to take our hand since they're so much faster. So we needed more discard sides. We brought in 1 Ascension Gun, which has a 2 discard side on top of the 2 EMP grenades we already have with 2 discard sides to help us close with just those extra discard. And then we put 1 Bartering back in. Bartering was an early cut just as we were trying to make space to test things. So we went 1 Bartering and 1 Ascension Gun just for more discard sides to help us close games.
Did you ever use the special or the Ascension Gun to, is it switch the battlefield?
So the Ascension Gun battlefield is use the battlefield that is set aside. So the one that was not chosen's claim effect. So very rarely was I ever on my battlefield, and I brought Medical Center, which is heal 1 damage from 2 different characters. So yes, absolutely. That special was amazing. It still worked with Yoda special chains, clandestine plays. So it also has a 1 focus side. So the Ascension Gun was there mostly for its discard side, but the special did come in clutch in a couple matchups.
That is absolutely wonderful that you took the deck that you won a North American Championship to a regional. Like I said, that's one of those stories I really do enjoy. I know that I would assume that your regional season for Star Wars Destiny is over, but if you had to attend another one, would you take this deck again if you had to win, or would you take a different deck? And if you would take a different deck, what deck would you take and or what changes would you make to this deck?
So if I had to have a tournament tomorrow, I would take exactly the deck I took to Miami again. I think it has really good matchups against the field. And I think two wide mill is probably taking a little bit of a step back just based on the Tarkin Snoke resurgence. So I wouldn't make any changes to the deck as it was built. I think the place that we got to in the end was great. So if I had to recommend anyone wanting to play this going forward in the regional season, I would take the exact same 30. However, if I had some time to prep, I would definitely want to test against the new 3 wide Snoke decks. I think those are probably the best decks in the meta going forward, something my teammate Joe from the Hyperloops as well as the Arrowbrook Gaming guys have been championing and doing really well. So I think that could be a tough matchup. So I'd want to test against that and see if there's any changes we needed to make for that. But no, I think 3 wide mill is still in a really good place. you have to really understand how to play the two wide matchup and understand that it is pretty 50-50. But if you can get past that, you're doing pretty good against every other deck. So I would definitely still recommend the same thing.
That is absolutely, like I said, that's absolutely wonderful and fascinating. And thank you so much for giving an insight into this deck. And I hope that if you are attending any regionals for any other game, I wish you the best of luck. I don't know what that looks like because I don't play those games. But yeah, congratulations on your win. And thank you for going over this deck.
Yeah, of course. I was happy, always happy to share the knowledge. And if multiple people have reached out, I'm on a lot of different Discords for Destiny. I'm most active in the Artificery and the Hyperloose Discord. If you have any questions, always feel free to reach out. I'm happy to talk through any changes or any questions you have about any mill deck, really.
Since we are making good time on this episode, I would like to talk about two spoilers specifically that were spoiled this week. And that would be the Allies of Necessity plot and the new Palpy. Starting with the new Palpatine, Unlimited Power. What do you guys think about this card? And do you think this card has potential, or do you think it's one of those trap cards, if you will?
I think it definitely has the potential. The ability is really, really good. I'd be a little worried about his low health total to start. I know he does gain as you play abilities, but we're losing a lot of staple abilities from the Awakenings block. So it'll be interesting to see what we get from Convergence. And we're also losing Holocron, which is another huge impactful card for villain force abilities. I still think there's a lot to see where it goes. I think there's definitely potential and, you know, a power action to roll in an ability die, whether that's, you know, the other one that was spoiled, which was Force Storm, which seems insanely powerful. I think there's definitely potential there. I think there's a lot more we have to see from the set before we decide whether he's playable competitively or not. But it's definitely cool design. And I like the point costing and the die sides that he has.
Yeah, I think he's quite strong. I would be concerned that if he gets a lot of competitive play, that we're going to see a lot of aggro decks come out just to try and gun him down as quickly as possible. And there's also a fear that he's got that bit, that Grievous effect, where it could be a little bit of a trap just to try and constantly trying to get abilities on him. And by the time you get to a level where he's good, he's dead. But he's got good die sides, lots of twos, so it's a shame defensive position is cycling out. I think he's great to see him back in the game. He's one that I've heard lots of people talking about. So yeah, excited to see if he's as good as he potentially looks.
I really like this card. That is one of the reasons why I selected this card to talk about. I think he does have potential. I personally hope that we have not seen everything that is good for him spoiled. I hope that there is still a lot that we haven't seen. Jeremy in the Team Covenant stream was using proxies, I believe. He was also playing Infinite as well. So who knows if he was playing any reprints in his deck. We don't know yet. I think the strength in him depends on if Force Speed / Sith Holocron gets reprinted. I think if those cards get reprinted, either one, I think Palpatine automatically gets a lot better. Like Reflex said, I do like his point cost. I do like his die size. I personally think he does have potential, but it all depends on what is coming next set and what we see in Trilogy with mill and vehicle. That might be tough for him to play, but I do think he has potential. There's just something about having 6 dice cards on him that you just want to do that, because that is something that you don't see in Star Wars Destiny. It's kind of like those old vehicle decks where you have like 10 vehicles on your board at once. It's just, I think it's cool.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's cool design. It's a new space that hasn't been explored yet. So whether he's competitive or not remains to be seen. But I do like the design of it, and I think it's a cool card.
Moving on to the other spoiler I want to talk about, and that is the Allies of Necessity plot. The Allies of Necessity plot is a gray neutral card that is -2 point cost, and you can only include it if 2 or more characters on your team share the same color. And after setup, you must discard a card from your hand and lose 2 resources. What do you think about this card?
My initial reaction was, I'm scared someone is going to be able to break it. -2 is a lot. That's a lot of points when you're choosing your characters. So I'm scared that it's really going to break the game and allow some combinations that we haven't been able to see, that we're not even thinking about. 2 resources and a card in the first round especially, which is generally the most important round, is very steep cost. So it might be enough. I think the key there is requiring 2 characters of the same color. So it's going to be much harder to go rainbow, which would, I think, absolutely break the game. I'm glad they included that. I'm a little hesitant on whether it's going to be played or not. I feel like it's one of those cards that it's either going to absolutely break the game or it's never going to be played. And those kind of cards scare me. So we'll see. Again, we'll have to see what comes out in Convergence. But there is that 6 die mill deck. So I'll definitely be trying that out and see how that goes.
I'm hopeful that we already really get to see this played in draft format. I'm hoping that's all they had in mind for this, just to really help you out when you just get a bit unlucky with your character draws and you need that little bit of help to get your points cost to work out. So I'm hoping this doesn't really see competitive play, because as well, I'm a little bit scared of what it could do if it's good outside a draft. So I'm hoping that they've tested it for that purpose and that purpose alone.
I think it will see competitive play. I think if you do play it, I think you play it with Snoke or Yoda, because both of those cards allow you to ramp and make up that 2-resource deficit. Not only that, but I think you can have it see play in Infinite. I think it goes great with Pole as well as any deck that runs Chance Cube and Mother Talzin. So I do think it will see play, but I don't think you play it outside of a deck that has, like I said, Yoda or Snoke.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think Sarah's points about Limited are a really good one. I think it's hopefully was designed in mind for Limited, which I think it's totally fine there. And it's a really solid inclusion. I just hope they kept an eye on Constructed and made sure there's nothing that's really crazy.
Are there any other spoilers you guys would like to say anything about that were spoiled this past week?
I'm not a big spoiler person. I don't like speculating before I've seen the whole set, just because it's really hard to know what a card's impact is going to be when there's 150 cards that we haven't seen. So I kind of usually try to stay away from spoilers until, you know, we have the whole set and we can start building with it. So I don't really have anything to add, unfortunately.
Yeah, for me, the only one that caught my eye was maybe Fall Storm. Just this die just looks insane and nearly on par with Vader's Fist. I mean, the fact it's blue character only and no redeploy, so we haven't seen 4-cost upgrades get that much use when they're not redeploy. So whether it will see that much play, I don't know, but the die sides look really good. It's got 2-3 range, 4 indirect, 2 discard, 2 shield and a special. And the special is place 1 resource on this upgrade, deal damage to a character equal to the number of resources on this upgrade, reroll this die instead of removing it. It just looks like it could be an absolute beast if someone figures out how to get it out for long enough.
One of the cards that really caught my attention outside of the two that I talked about was the Sentinel Messenger, which is an 8-health, 8-cost blue villain character card that has a 2 melee, 1 focus, 1 focus, 1 shield, 1 resource blank. But that's not why I like it. I like it for its ability. And his ability is, after you activate this character, look at the top card of your deck, you may play that card, paying its cost. Obviously, he has an ability where you cannot play blue abilities on this character, but that's not why you play him. I think it is kind of like a lottery, because you never know what you're going to get. But being able to play a card that is not in your hand for merely activating your character, just something about that that I find to be really efficient. I don't know how you would play this character, but I do think that it will see play along the lines of Rebel Engineer. I really like that we're seeing those effects that happen when a character activates that not only happens, but makes your deck efficient. Jabba is another one. So I do think we'll see those characters that have this effect have play, and I don't know where he will fit, but I think you will see him. Heading into a wrapping up process, I want to move into our next segment where we are going to talk about one card that we would like to see from the Awakening block get reprinted in the next cycle. What card would you like to see get reprinted, starting with Reflex?
All right, so I have an unpopular opinion and one that I think will be less controversial. My number one, which is my favorite card, is Sabine. I think people obviously have a very negative reaction to her, but she's always been my favorite, and I've always had a lot of fun with her, and I think she's never been as bad as people think she is. There's very few games I've ever won with her where she just rolled someone off the table. It's much more of like a combo deck from my view, but I understand that's controversial, and it's almost definitely not going to happen. The one that I think actually has a chance, and Sarah actually brought it up earlier, is Defense Position. I think it's a really cool card. One of my favorite parts about Destiny is a tempo game where there's this stress on who's going to claim the battlefield, knowing when to give up some extra value to get the battlefield going to the next round. I mean, I think the Defensive Position is a really cool card that rewards that. And it's a card that I played in my Leyota decks because I like to play very fast and very aggressive that a lot of other people didn't play. But it has a lot of value, and I think it would be really cool to see in the next set.
It could be such a blowout card as well. It's just, it could be so devastating to roll like 7 dice and just have them all removed.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's also, you know, a little fair because it has that pretty hard restriction on it. And it's pretty easy to play around, you know, if you don't roll all your dice out into the pool and you resolve them as you should, kind of like slowly as you go, then, you know, it doesn't get a ton of value. But I think it's a pretty cool card.
So mine is one that hasn't seen an awful lot of play lately, but in the right meta when we've got a lot of shields, I've absolutely loved this card. It's the light bow. So it's got a special that removes shields and does damage as well. And if you're pairing that with either like Yoda, Poe 2 or Ayla to special chain into it, it can be absolutely devastating. And it's a card that I've really loved to use when I've been up against the sort of shield heavy meta.
I think that is a good choice. I think it is fairly balanced. It is also a card that I think will get reprinted if we see a new chat, which we need a new chat. For my selection this episode, I got to go with another character card. And she is a character card that actually still sees play. And that was, of course, Sienna. I think she is still relevant. I think she will still see play after rotation. Yes, it would be nice to see a new version of her. But the way that she is designed right now, with her ability becoming a power action, I think she will still be relevant. And I think you can print her as is, and she will still see play. So Sienna is my card for this episode. It is now time to head into the conclusion of this episode, and we would like to begin by asking you some shotgun questions. Are you ready, Andrew?
I'm ready.
What is your favorite card in Star Wars Destiny?
I mean, I think that one's pretty obvious. It's 100% Sabine. I've always been a Sabine player. I only became a Mill player because they took Sabine away from me. So that one's on you, Jeremy.
What is your least favorite card in Star Wars Destiny?
This one's tougher. I don't really have a problem with most cards in the game. I think my least favorite card had to be like Rey 1 in the Awakenings block. I think Han Rey early on was so uninteractive. And I know that's funny coming from someone who likes Sabine. But Sabine only does it once, where Rey could do 3, 4, 5 actions in a row, which was insane. And another card like Imperial Inspection pre-Errata, I think that was really rough. It was free and just constantly hit, bounced up back to your hand. Those are probably the two least interactive cards for me in the game that I really didn't enjoy.
What is one card in Star Wars Destiny that you think is underrated?
Underrated. I'm going to have to go with a new one from across the galaxy, No Questions Asked. That's a card I've put into my Leia Yoda decks. It's 0 cost. Then it says you can pay up to 3 resources to remove that many dice. And if you're on your battlefield, draw that many cards. I think it's such a blowout late in the game, especially for a mill deck that usually has a lot of money going into the end game. That's been really good, especially mill mirrors. I think it's a blowout, yeah. Oh, it gives the resources to your opponent. So there is a pretty big drawback, but usually in the end game when they have a lot of money, it doesn't mean too much.
And what card do you think is overrated?
Overrated? Oh, man.
We asked the hard questions here.
Yeah, seriously, that one I'm not ready for. Overrated. Let's see. I guess we'll stick on the mill train. And I think a lot of people have started coming around to this. But Force Meditation, I think, isn't as big of a deal as most people think it is. Especially in Hero Mill, where they have a lot of cards that hit the deck already. Sometimes it can just be dead late. It's still a good card, and I think it still has some play. But like I said, I cut it from my regional winning deck and definitely didn't miss it at all.
Last shotgun question. What is one canon Star Wars character that you would like to see in Star Wars Destiny that has not yet been featured?
So I'm definitely a Scum guy. I started playing X-Wing in the Scum faction. I love bounty hunters. I love the rogue underworld aspect of the universe. So I would love to see a Dengar. I think he's not in the game, and I think he's a really iconic character. That would be really fun. I have a feeling we'll probably see him coming up in the next cycle. But also a playable IG-88. I just love that character. That's what I play in Imperial Assault, and I have a lot of fun with him. So I wish we would have a playable version of him. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'd love to see him too. I think, is it Spirit Rebellion he came out? I just don't think they'd quite, his points cost was just too high, and he just didn't get to see play for such a character that's quite loved.
Yeah, I think they based a lot of him around that special ability, but a special that doesn't give you value until the following turn is pretty rough to play with.
I think we will see another version of him, especially if him being in the Mandalorian is true. So I do think that we will see him sooner rather than later. But before he comes to the game, I would like to see Zuckuss, Forlorm, and Dengar, which is coming this next set, it looks like. So,
yeah, I've seen some artwork for him by one of the artists that does a lot of Destiny stuff. So I think he's coming too.
That's exciting. I'm ready.
It is now time to wrap things up. Thank you, Reflex, for coming on and joining us for this wonderful conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. It was absolutely a great time, and I'm always glad to share knowledge.
If people would like to contact you, where can they find you?
So I'm not a big social media person. I am on Facebook and Twitter, but I very rarely interact there. The best place to contact me is probably the Discords. Like I said, I mostly spend time on the Hyperloops and the Artificery Discords. So I'm definitely active there all times of the day. So if you ever want to reach out to me, just look for Reflex.
Yeah, if people would like to find you, where can they find you?
So I'm on Twitter. You can find me from Miss Sevens, or I'm also in the Hyperloops Discord. So send me a message on there as well.
That concludes this episode of I Rebel. Thank you so much for tuning in. I have been Jedi Geek Girl, and she has been Sarah. Until next time, Jedi Geek Girl, out. This has been I Rebel, a Star Wars Destiny podcast. I have been your host, Jedi Geek Girl. If you would like to contact me, please send me an email at irebeldestiny@gmail.com. And as always, may the Force be with you. I Rebel is an independent podcast, not associated with Lucasfilm, Disney, Fantasy Flight Games, or any other organization. All copyrights for Star Wars, Star Wars Destiny, and all other properties belong to the proper copyright holders.